Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Your welcome is brought to you for free today by our friends at betonline.ag. It's a new year, and that means a fresh start towards success in your sports betting activities. We've got the best odds on the NBA, NHL, MMA, and of course, NFL playoffs, all for the taking. Get in the mix at betonline.ag. Use the promo code podcast1 for your 50% welcome bonus. Betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts and the exclusive partner of Podcast One Sportsnet.
Uncle Jail, Uncle Jail, there's no bad guy like Uncle Jail, never lost, not even a round, undefeated, undisputed, oh yeah, here comes a bad guy.
What's happening, guys? Happy Friday! And thank you for joining another special episode of Your Welcome. So how would I coach an athlete, prepare him, train him to beat Khabib? And this always seems like a bit of a pitfall, right? I mean, one of the things that happens in this sport where you can get a major leg up on other sports is you sign a contract. You know when the event is going to be, so you have a period of time to focus on one guy. And it's very unique in this sport. You know, use the NFL just as an example, but their season and their schedule is set ahead of time all the way to the playoffs, but the playoffs happen pretty quick. So you don't really have time to just prepare for one team. If you do that, you got somebody else the next Sunday, somebody else the next Sunday. So you just prepare yourself. You prepare your own team. You get your offense, your defense ready, and you go out and you put it to test against anybody who shows up. Okay. This sport's a little different, but there is a little bit of a misconception that if you can sit down and identify what your opponent wants to do, you can then sit down and identify what it is you need to do to stop him. And that seems to be the game that gets played for year after year and fight after fight and really just the entire history of the industry. If you're going to beat Khabib, yes, it would be responsible as a coach to sit down and identify what Khabib does. First and foremost, he pushes guys to the fence. If Khabib cannot push his opponent to the fence, it is a totally different fight. Totally different fight if Khabib's back's on the cage or if you're out in the open. It's a completely different animal than if you let him put you into the fence. Okay, but it does always come back to Mike Tyson, right? Everybody knew that Mike was going to hit you with an uppercut and follow with a hook. Everybody knew it. And everybody thought about it and they worried about it and then they brought it into reality and it happened. He was one of these athletes, much like Babe Ruth, that could walk to the mound, tell you where he was going to hit the ball and do it anyway. So you have to consider this because so many times, no matter how many, we want to break down an opponent and figure out what his tendencies are. Okay, great. But in 3 months, average 3 months to prepare for a guy, you are not going to change anything about that athlete. Nothing. But if you try to, you could make your athlete worse. If you try to get your athlete to do things to respond to his opponent or counter his opponent, you could make him worse. He could unsharpen a few of his sharper weapons. Few of his tools while thinking about this opponent. I mean, here's the bottom line with Khabib or anybody else that's great. The guy that's going to beat him, I can tell you what he needs to do. Okay. He needs to keep his back off the fence. He needs to not get pressured. He needs to be able to match that pace. That's what this athlete that's going to beat Khabib needs to do. But whoever that athlete is, and I believe there's a good chance that athlete is Tony Ferguson, but whoever that athlete is started these skills when he was 10 years old. Started these skills at the latest when he was 13 years old, at the latest as an early teenager. Just so happened he's going to have 3 months to focus, sharpen them, get his weight down, eat right, try to be healthy, some of these other things, and then go into battle. There is no coach and there is no team that could take anybody in a 3 month training camp period, and many guys go more like an 8 week training camp period, and make them better, make them have the skills to stop the most dominant lightweight in the world who's never been stopped. Save one round against Conor McGregor. I mean, really, quite bulletproof. Has looked absolutely invincible. the theories do still exist. And I keep saying this, but I feel as though I'm the first to say it. I think that's why I keep saying it. I think I want my credit for identifying that Khabib's wrestling and Khabib's prowess for getting on top and then pounding guys, but it's in that order, right? He has to first get on top of you before he does some of those lockdowns and entanglements with his legs and starts that ground and pound and starts to show that pace and starts to wear on guys. It goes in that order. So if you don't want to worry about the entanglements and worry about what you're going to do on the ground, okay, great. You may not have to if you can just stop from being put in that position. If you want to stop from being put in that position, rule number one with Khabib, keep your back off the fence. The story of Khabib being a great wrestler is justified and created because he always ends up on top of his opponents. I don't know that anybody else, aside from me, I think I really was the first. And I do want a little bit of, hey, good job, Chael. He gets in that position by pushing you against the fence. That's when his tools open up. And it's one of the reasons that fellow fighters give him so much credit. It's one of the reasons we look at him and go, wow, that's remarkable. Because a great defense, if you're ever taken on a wrestler, is to go to the cage. Go to the cage, put your hips on it, turn your feet, get your heels on there. There's nothing for him to lock onto. The fence becomes your partner. You're now in some ways resting while Khabib's, in theory, the one that's got to work. Khabib has developed a system to pull you off the fence, to use your weight against you, to use that gravity into his favor. It's very remarkable skill set that he has, but it doesn't change the fact that this is the way that he likes to do things, and in this specific order. Pressure you, get you on the fence, leg entanglement, pull you off, drop down to your legs, pull you out, start tying you up on the ground, start getting wrist control, and start pounding. He's very methodical in what he does. He's very difficult to stop, particularly, in my opinion, once he gets on top. He's hard to stop you from taking you down. I acknowledge that, but I feel that you're in bigger problems once he gets on top. I've never seen him in threat of a submission. I've never seen him reversed. I've never seen guys scramble out. Doesn't mean it hasn't happened. I'm sharing with you off my mind. I can't recall it. I have seen guys stop his takedown. I have seen guys make him work hard. What those guys then don't do is they return to the same position, and that position is with their back on the fence. They need to return to a different position, which is out into the open. I think that Tony Ferguson has a wonderful opportunity to stop him, but I also would acknowledge for you that Tony Ferguson began working those skills as a little boy. He's had 20 years to prepare for this match. It just so happens that as this match lines up, their skills start to wash each other out, at least on paper and at least on theory. Those boys are going to have to get in there in April and show us who's right and wrong in this matter. But the theory that you could go in 3 months or even in 8 weeks as a great coach and transform an athlete, this one backfires all the time, every time. After all, a fight is a dance. If you're a coach and you're informing your athlete, this is what he needs to look for, and this is how he needs to respond, and you start doing the dance moves with the other person leading the dance, you're now on defense. They can call martial arts self-defense all they want. If you're a fighter, you know self-offense. You know how to be the aggressor. When things go bad and push comes to shove, you know how to get to your target before the other one. If you start working on and focusing on what your opponent's going to do, look, it's okay. This is a piece of it. Knowing what your opponent wants to do, this is definitely a piece of it. This isn't something that you would ignore, but it's not something that you would focus and dwell on or ever make believe that you could correct in a training camp. So Ronda Rousey was named as Top Sports Moment. And this was by like People Magazine. It was a very credible publication, but Top Sports Moments of the Decade. What that moment was, I neither here nor there. But I do think if you look at Ronda's career, it is a little bit like a fine wine. I think it looks better and better with time. And, you know, there was no doubt of Ronda's impact. And many things were embellished. I mean, that's what the world of promotion is. And Ronda, as a star, the biggest star in the sport, that simply never happened. Ronda does not hold any record, but never did. It wasn't as though she lost a record. She never held a record for pay-per-view, for live gate, never had a record. But to say that she wasn't the biggest star, I don't know about that, because she was most likely to end up on Jimmy Fallon's couch. Who in mixed martial arts can get an interview with Ellen DeGeneres tomorrow? There was only one person. It was Ronda Rousey. And there was something extremely special about that. I'm not attempting to take away from anything that she did. I'm just sharing with you, if we're going to tell the story accurately, as far as her being the biggest star or moving the needle, she moved it, but she was never the biggest star. But it was one of these very interesting things that when things finally went bad for Ronda, when that light dimmed a little bit and she said, all right, I'm out. I'm going to do something else. She was met with so much resistance from the community that thought, you know, you owe us more. You owe us another fight. We want to see you fall down one more time. We watched you make it to the top of the mountain. We came along that journey. We pitched in our time and our money and our emotions. Now we want to enjoy the fall. And she said, you know what? You're not gonna, because I got other things I can go do, and I'm going to go do them. And as you look back on that, that was a good message by Rhonda, wasn't it? I mean, that was very responsible by Rhonda, not only for herself, not only to look out for herself and her own interests and go, listen, I got one foot in this, but I got a foot in over here. And if there's anything I've learned about combat over my life of doing it, it's that you have to be all in. That was responsible by her. And I think that it set a very good example. Let me tell you another story that happened over the year. Chuck Liddell comes back, gets beat up by Tito. Okay. Now that was a very embarrassing moment for Chuck. He didn't look right out there. He shouldn't have been in there. He'd beaten Tito twice. They had a bit of a rivalry. Tito gets the final word. I mean, that was an embarrassing moment for Chuck, but only at the time that it happened. Now that a few months have gone by, people need to thank Chuck. They go, hey, Chuck, you know what? Thank you for that. Because I've wanted to do what you did. I've wanted to come back into something, grab a part of my youth, you know, get back in shape, go out and compete in a sport. I've wanted to do that. And I've lied to myself and thought that I could be the one guy to do it. But you know what? You're a lot better than I was. You're a lot tougher guy than I was. You're a lot more focused than I was. And if it didn't work for you, you now let me know that I don't need to go test those waters either. And it really was kind of a cool thing that Chuck did in hindsight. I mean, he put himself out there. It was all an experiment. Can a 48-year-old former world champion come back if he gets focused and gets good coaches and gets down to the weight class and takes on a familiar opponent? I mean, if everything's right, can a guy come back at 48 after having not done it for 7 years? It's a fair question that many of us have wondered. How many of us have dreamed at night of going back to the big game in high school, right? The big football, if I could just go back, if I could just do things differently, whatever it is. But how many of us? Chuck actually did it. It was an experiment. He showed us the result, but he saved many other people from having to go and do it themselves. I mean, Chuck kind of turns out to be the hero of the story once you put a little time between it. I feel the same thing with Rhonda. I really think Rhonda is a hero of this story. I think that she made a good example that there's other things to do in life. You have to pick. You're not going to get them all, but whatever it is you do, go all in. Go all in. And I don't think the Rhonda story is done. I don't think it ends with a pro wrestler. I think it likely ends more as a mother, a wife, hopefully a coach someday, maybe to her own kids. Let's see how it goes. Get too personal on it. But what I'm saying is, as you do look back at some of the decisions that Rhonda made, while they weren't all really popular in the moment, she deserves a thank you. And she also deserves a good job. And she also deserves a, you were right. You were right, Rhonda. If that's not something you want to do fully, get out of the way. Let somebody else have the opportunity. You go and fully do something else. And that's exactly what she did. So here was something surprising. Edson Barboza has come out and said that in 2020, he's going to drop down to featherweight. Now, that really surprised me. Really surprised me for a couple of reasons. First off, let's just start at the beginning. How? You ever seen Edson Barboza? He looks like he's carved out of stone. Where is he going to find 10 pounds? I would have to imagine it's a struggle to get down to 155. I mean, I would just have to imagine that. Where's he going to find 10 pounds? I think we saw from Jose Aldo just doing it, who also perfectly lean guy, that it's possible if you want to cannibalize your own body and take some muscle off. Sure, you could do it. I think it does come back. I think I ask a fair question when I say, why? Why would you want to do that? It would seem to me as a fan, and Edson doesn't have to do what's fans want. He has to do what he believes is best for Edson. But it would just seem to me as a fan that him going, if he wants to change weight class, 170 in many ways would make a little bit more sense than going down to 145. Okay. The other reason I was surprised is he's doing so well at 155. Do I need to remind him he is coming off a win? Do I need to remind him that that was in a co-main event in an arena that was erected just for that? Do I need to remind Edson how well he's doing at 155? Question is, well, what do you want to do down at 145? And is this all about the fact that there's a change there? That Volkanovski needs an opponent? Is it all about that? I mean, if it's not about a title, what the hell would it be about? Everything's going great in the career of Edson Barboza. Everybody knows who this guy is. He's completely feared. Nobody calls him out. Nobody wants to fight Barboza. You fight Barboza if you have to fight him, and then you get ready to be in a whole lot of pain. Whether you win or lose, I mean, he's a very respected figure in the sport, but he's also a staple at 155 pounds. So I have to assume, I think you guys would agree with it, this is about a title. Okay, No problem. But did anybody give you the advice that if you go down to 145 pounds, here's the path? Did somebody in a leadership position say, hey, Barboza, we're looking for some fresh blood, and if you can get down here, we're going to give you a fight, and if you do well in it, boom, you're going to slide right into a title? And I only ask that because that kind of seems where he's at 155. I mean, there's a number of really good choices at 155 pounds, right? Anytime you get in a jam of what should I do, and it's 155, Justin Gaethje. Justin Gaethje is the answer to every single question that comes up at 155 pounds, but so is Kevin Lee. So is Tony Ferguson. So is Edson Barboza. So is Paul Felder. I mean, there's a lot of guys at 155 that are the right answer. He's in a good spot. He's one of those guys. Now, if you look at the fact that he's already been matched up with Khabib, and if he believes that Khabib is going to be victorious over Tony, he goes, look, I tested those waters. I get it. Not a good matchup for me, and I want the strap. Then you go down to 145, and I'm only guessing what could be going through his head. But for him to leave and go down to 145, I mean, the lifestyle change and the commitment that he's going to have to make, literally, he's going to have to cannibalize his body. He's going to have his body eat away at it and burn calories. I mean, it's just one of these things where if you worked as hard as Edson to get that strength and that power that he had, I mean, he's a very special, fast, rare skill set, balance. Edson Barboza has some of the best balance. Nobody ever talks about balance in sport, but we all know how important it is. Barboza can spin around with one foot on the ground, kick you right in the mouth. Know right where you are. I mean, he's an amazing athlete, this guy. To think that he's going to cannibalize and take some of that off that he worked so hard to get, it's just a surprise for me. And I'm in. If he wants to go down to 145 and give us all some parity, I'm in for it. I would just ask Edson before he did it, hey, do you have a plan? Is there a strategy? Have you made some private phone calls and shared your theory with anybody else who's signed off on that theory? I'm curious as to why. I really am. And if it is about a fresh coat of paint, and it is about some different parody, great. I've seen that movie before, a million times. It's a good movie, but I do argue for you, consider going the other way. Have you considered? I mean, Edson trains at the ATT. ATT's had a foothold. They've had a stranglehold on the welterweight title for a meaningful period of time. Whether it was Robbie Lawler, or Tyron Woodley, Colby Covington. I mean, they got 170 figured out. It would be pretty easy to go and just touch hands with a teammate, go get 5, 10, 15 good minutes in and see where you stack up there. Maybe he's already done that. Maybe size was too big of an issue and he didn't like it, but I don't know that a committed size was ever made. He's never committed to 170. Spent a couple of months allowing his body to adjust. It's just a thought. I would not instruct Edson Barboza. This is a very accomplished guy. I would not instruct him where to go. But it did seem to me, whether it is or not, like a little bit of a knee-jerk reaction. This is a guy, after all, coming off a victory over Paul Felder. I have that wrong, don't I? They gave Felder that fight. Before you guys go to my YouTube, you're right. They gave Felder that fight. I forgot that. Barboza won that match. Felder won the decision. Okay, maybe that's what's got him all up in arms. But it still would seem to me that the trilogy fight with Paul Felder, he just has big things at 155. I don't know why this guy would want to go through the turmoil and the angst of dropping down a weight class. It seems very difficult, particularly when he can just look at the experiment that was just done by Jose Aldo. We don't see it largely, particularly with older athletes, when they go down in weight. I don't know that we have enough history to support as a trajectory of the future that dropping weight, I mean, that's murderer's row. 155, 145 pounds, two toughest weight classes in MMA, and have been across the board. Organizations in Japan, Bellator, UFC, across the board. That is the hot spot. You want to change your body? Go have a little bit of fun doing it. Gain some weight. Get yourself out of the fire. Get yourself up to another weight. 170 is not easy. Not my message here. But it's a hell of a lot easier than 145. The new year brings a whole new feeling of anticipation when it comes to the sports betting odds, especially in the NBA and NHL. Over in the NBA, the Bucks, the Celtics, the Pacers, the Sixers, they're keeping things interesting in the Eastern Conference, while the Lakers, the Nuggets, and the Clippers continue to dominate the West. Over in the NHL, the Bruins, Coyotes, Blues, and Capitals all stand atop of their respective divisions. Who knows what 2020 is going to have in store? Visit our good friends and our exclusive partner at Podcast One. Go to betonline.ag and take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag. Use the promo code Podcast One. That's betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts and the exclusive partner of Podcast One Sportsnet.
This is your welcome with Chael Sonnen.
Doing great,
we got the
man.
Chaps in the house tonight.
Yes, we do, man. Unbelievable, man. Titans in here. About to go off, dude.
We ready to do this stuff?
Ready to rock, man.
Ready to rock,
camera guys. Ready to roll. Mike, you ready?
Ready. Ready. Listen free to Hot Boxing, exclusively available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Now, back to your welcome with Chael Sonnen.
Let's do some fan questions.
Hey, Chael. Just wondering, who is your favorite fighter going into 2020, and who are you most excited for in the UFC? Appreciate the content. Thank you.
Well, 2020 has already started to lay out a little bit, right? I mean, what's Masvidal going to do? What's next for Usman? What's next for Covington? I mean, these guys are all stars. Is St. Pierre coming back? I mean, look, we've already got our January. We already got Connor and Cowboy done. We already got our April done with Khabib versus Tony. We already have been informed that Stipe and Daniel are going to go at it one more time. I mean, the year is starting to unfold. Dana White has even said that Adesanya versus Romero has a time frame, and that is about to be announced. So who am I looking forward to the most is a little bit harder to answer, but only because we're put in a really great spot right now where we have a number of contests that are going to take us until early summer that we can already have anticipation for.
Hey, how's it going, Uncle Chael? Big fan here. So here's my question. If you can combine all the different attributes of different fighters into one ultimate fighter, so say, take the boxing of Conor McGregor, take the head kicks of Edson Barboza and Mikhail Krokov, take the strength of Francis Ngannou, and take the grappling of the bad guy himself, Chael P. Sonnen, and trash talk from the best to ever do it, of course, the juice box crusher himself, Tito Ortiz. Who would you pick and why? Keep up the content, Uncle Chael.
Well, I don't know that I would disagree with who you just threw out there. I like what you said about strength and Ngannou. I think if you were looking for grappling, I think that Maya would probably be the guy that you'd have to turn to. And so many people think of Maya as just a jiu-jitsu player. But if you see what a wonderful wrestler he is, just go see his last fight against Ben Askren. I mean, Maya could do a little bit of everything. I think if you were just to grab one guy for the grappling skills, it would probably be him. I like what you're saying about Conor McGregor with his boxing. I like the Conor more for his length, his ability to control distance, his awkwardness. He has an awkwardness similar to Gunnar Nelson's. They used to train together a little bit. Maybe that's why I make that reference. I prefer the just straight up boxing of Stipe Miocic. I think your ability to compete and the toughness and to stay in the moment, I think you'd have to look at a George St. Pierre. I like for kicks going to Barboza. I like a grit of, you know, somebody along the Paul Felder lines. You know, and when it comes to trash talk, I think Colby's a lot of fun. Connor's obviously going to come to mind. I'm really enjoying a lot of the work, though, that Adesanya's been putting out.
Hey, Chael, just want to know your thoughts on a potential matchup between Cron Gracie and Ryan Hall. I personally think it makes a lot of sense because of where Ryan Hall is ranked. I believe he's ranked 14 or 15, yet still nobody wants to fight him. And then you got Cron Gracie, who's trying to break his way into that top 15. And I think this is a perfect stylistic matchup for him, the battle of grapplers in that division. Who do you think would come out on top? Just want to know your thoughts. Thanks.
Oh, I'd love to see that match. I like what you're doing there. You know, that could be an interesting one. Skill-wise, you know, Ryan Hall is just, he's crazy. I mean, he's doing these crazy and wild. He's so fun to watch. Cron is a little bit more by the book. But I do think that if you had, speculating here, but I would suspect that Hall admires Cron on some level. Whether it's the family lineage, whether it's who got their black belt first, whether it's, you know, medals in grappling events, I would imagine that a decorated grappler, an aspiring grappler like Ryan Hall, on some level admires Cron Gracie, and mentally that could be a little bit of a struggle. I think as far as the match goes, and I've seen some very interesting positions, maybe even Ryan Hall shut down in a couple of spots, but exposing Cron in some other spots, I love everything that match would have to offer. I would just want to make sure that both guys want to do it. And I'm only guessing, but I think I'm right, at least to some degree, that Hall is probably not looking to fight a fellow jiu-jitsu ace.
G'day, Chael. Loving your work. Hey, I just watched Khabib v. Poirier for like the third or fourth time, and I realized that Khabib, he always wants to, you know, push the opponent back to outside of those two octagon markings on the canvas and then make your takedown to, you know, get him up against the fence. And to do that, you normally do, you know, just steps forward a little bit and, you know, feels the opponent out and sort of slowly pushes him back. And then when he couldn't get, like, Poirier, for example, to do that, he throws a few punches to, you know, force Poirier to panic and get on the back foot and then makes the takedown. Do you think if, when Tony fights Khabib in April, do you think he's going to be able to sort of avoid stepping back and sort of like step to the side and remain inside those two octagon markings to avoid the takedown? Or do you think Khabib will still be willing to eventually make the takedown in the center of the octagon and go from there? Cheers, Chao.
Oh, I definitely agree with you that if Tony can keep his back off the fence. I mean, look, Khabib is not this great wrestler, okay? Now, I'm not putting Khabib's wrestling down. He's very good. What I'm saying is there is a little bit of a dots connected in perception of the viewer's mind. Okay, Khabib's fighting, Khabib's on top, Khabib's mauling somebody. Oh, look, it's a new round, it's a new fight, it's a new match. Khabib's on top again, mauling somebody. He must be a great wrestler. Look, Khabib is great at getting takedowns, but wrestling, as I'm classifying it here, wrestling is done in the open. There are no walls in wrestling. There are no fences in wrestling. If you went off of the mat, the referee would bring you back and you would then compete in the open again. Khabib does not get a lot of takedowns in the open. In fact, he gets stuffed a lot of times. He goes to a single leg, which is a very ineffective takedown for mixed martial arts. I've never really seen a mixed martial artist outside of Chris Weidman who's made a career at takedowns based on a single leg. It's just a very rare takedown. Khabib is a master of pushing you against the fence and going to work from there. So if you're Tony or anybody else, if you can stand your ground or push forward, not back up and not be pressured and not let your back hit the fence against Khabib, if you can do that, and it appears to be a very hard thing to do, but if you can do that, at least on probability, your chances of not being taken down go up.
Uncle Chael, it's Garrett McKean from Washington, Utah. It's early. I'm going to work, but I'm getting your clips in. Real quick, what do you think of a cruiserweight division in the UFC? 225 pounds. Break up that split between 205 and 265. If we could even raise the 265 heavyweight limit. What do you think? Enough athletes at that weight to cover a division for that? Thanks, Uncle Chael. Big fan.
Oh, I love the 220, the 225 pound weight class. You know, just to remind you, Kurt Angle. That's where Kurt Angle won his world championships and his Olympic championships, and Kurt really would have been stuck. I mean, under today's scope, and I'm using amateur wrestling, but I think that Kurt's a name that everybody can relate to that watches this, went on to be a big WWE star. Look, under today's scope, he is likely not only not a world champion, not an Olympic champion, he's likely not even on those teams. He wouldn't have had a weight class. Kurt would have had to cut all the way down to 185 pounds, okay, which would have been Les Gutchess's weight. He would have had to cannibalize his body. Kurt, for 4 years of college, was a heavyweight. He's a very small heavyweight, but he was still a heavyweight. To make believe that he's then going to cut all the way down to 185 pounds, I think is a stretch, and I think he would have just been too small to be heavyweight. I mean, I want to say in 1996, yeah, Kurt was on the same team as Bruce Baumgartner. He wasn't going to make the team at heavyweight. So Kurt needed that 220-pound weight class. And I only offer that to you as an example, because could you imagine somebody as great of an athlete, a world and Olympic champion, as great of an athlete as Kurt Angle, not even being given the opportunity to compete? You would have never heard of Kurt Angle had that weight not been established. And I think that there's probably some guys like that right now. I think there's probably some of these in-between guys that they're just not quite big enough for heavyweight. They're too damn big, you know, to get down to the light heavyweight class. I agree with you. That is a big gap. 205 to 265 is a very big gap. I like cruiserweight, and I think I've also proven my point by giving the example of Kurt Angle, that there's guys and athletes there that can draw. This isn't some ability where a promoter wouldn't want to do it. For example, heavyweight isn't the heaviest class. You may not know that. There's another class, and I believe it's called super heavyweight, or it's called ultra heavyweight, but the commissions all have it. The ABC will contend, all commissions have it, where you can go above 265 for both boxing and MMA. It's just extremely rarely tested. There's just not very many promoters that want to get in there and get in business with athletes that big in combat. First off, there's not a lot of them. It'd be very hard to form a division. But secondly, in a sport like this, it's so built around conditioning to make believe that you're going to have these 350-pound guys come in there and go at it. I'm just offering you for an example. Okay, the other end of it. I'm offering you for an example. There is things to do above the 265-pound weight class. And I think that you're spot on. If we're going to break something up, so much talk was talked about 165. I don't really know where that dialogue came, but it really got hot. For a while there, there was even guys trying to form a division and athletes making agreements to show up and compete at 165. And it seemed like there was a whole big pool. They're ready to do it. I love that. I love the opportunity there. But it does seem to me that if you could only add one class, it would be more appropriate to give the opportunity to the guys that are stuck with the big gap between 205 and 265. So to your question of would I like to see a cruiserweight, you bet.
You're listening to Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen. Now back to Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen.
What the heck is going on with Anthony Johnson? I would like to know. I can't make that into a thing. Ryan, it's some kind of deal with USADA. I mean, that's the he is for sure back. 100%. Came to Submission Underground, went out and did Quintet. His body is changing. He looked different at Quintet than he did Submission Underground. There's pictures on the internet. You know, he's in training. He's working with Vitor and the guys. But, you know, he had talked about Ngannou and he talked about heavyweight. But then recently he was talking about Jones and he was talking about 205. I mean, what the heck is going on with Rumble Johnson? And then there's a big question, too, because USADA isn't private. Hey, man, are you in the pool or aren't you? So have we seen the last of GSP? Can we put a button on that? Is this talk done? No, I don't believe that for a second. In fact, it's the opposite. As we come into the new year, I am very confident we are going to see George St. Pierre in 2020. And the only issue is, where are we going to see him? Let me lay out a scenario for you. And it's just how much difference a day can make, how fast things change in this sport. Go back as recently as 2 weeks, Dana White did an interview with somebody, and he was talking about Conor versus Cowboy. He said, just imagine this is a 155-pound match, because these are both 155-pounders. Holiday season, they're not going to cut weight. We're writing down 170. That's what the scale said. But just imagine it's at 155. Okay. But he furthered that to say, because if Conor wins, he goes right into a rematch with for 155 pounds. I think Dana was specifically talking about Khabib, but Khabib's got business with Tony. Okay. And this sent a few guys within the division up in arms, but that's what's going to happen. Anytime the boss makes an announcement for a title fight, the other guys that wish that they had the title fight, they go up in arms. Nothing new here, but Dana's now come out 2 weeks later and said, yeah, Conor really wants to fight Masvidal for the BMF title. Now, it wasn't as strong as a statement as the one where Dana said, if Conor beats Cowboy, Conor goes and fights for the belt. It was more of just that this is what's on Conor's mind, but that is where we then get involved, right? That is where the viewer and the fan then begins to get their say in the matter. Yeah, hey, do that. That's what we want to see. And it does beg the question, what's a bigger fight? Masvidal versus Usman? Conor versus Masvidal? That's going to factor in. That isn't going to be the final decision maker, but that's going to factor in. I also do have a real frustration, and I hope that we can all at least get on the same team and form a little bit of an army over here to push back. Many people act as though George Masvidal isn't a champion. Yes, he is. He has a belt. 100%, he is a champion. And if Conor sees that, and now Conor is adding credibility to that premise by saying, yeah, you got a belt, and I want it. Well, that's why we have the belt, guys. Fighting isn't as important today as it once was. It used to be very important that your village had a good fighter. Because if somebody came to it, it could cost you lives. It could cost you territory. It was very important fighting. In this kind of combat, there are not lives at stake. There is not territory. There might be a couple of dollars and there might be a little bit of ego slash prestige. But we have to have something to fight for. So a promoter one day came up with the idea of a belt. And he threw it out there. And sure enough, it worked. Like dogs on a bone, fighters all went for the belt. I'm one of those guys. It was a real thing. Having that physical piece of metal and leather meant something. Meant a lot. Dedicate your life to it. Well, Masvidal's got that. And Conor wants it. It adds credibility. It does frustrate me anytime somebody says, Masvidal deserves a title shot. Okay, great. Masvidal has a title. Please don't forget that. Well, Masvidal shouldn't be in such a big fight. Why does everybody keep saying it? Because he's the champion. Masvidal is a champion. That just really pisses people off. It makes them upset and it creates envy and jealousy. It still happened, and it's still reality, and George Masvidal is the BMF champion with a belt to prove it. We need to establish that. One thing that did happen throughout 2019, nobody called more fights than me. Nobody got, hey, Chael, great job. You told us all that these two guys were going to fight before anybody else did. Okay, fine, and thank you for the praise, but my detective work was very simple. Two guys go after each other in the media, and then on the exact same day, both guys go absolutely silent and don't start calling each other out. That means the fight was made. Okay, that was the only thing that I did. I had no other detective skills than that, but it did allow me to predict for you. Yes, Khabib and Tony is done. I don't know the date, I don't know where it is, but just take it from me, that fight's done. Khabib and Tony are going after each other. Their coaches are going after each other. Dana's talking about the fight. All of a sudden, everybody goes absolutely silent. That means the fight's done. The same thing when Romero was coming after Adesanya, and they're going back, and all of a sudden, you don't hear anything about the fight's done. It's one of those things, okay? It's just one of those easy things to predict, and it was the only thing that I did over here. But with that said, and with the incredible streak that I was given credit for through 2019, if we apply that same logic, hasn't George St. Pierre gone a little bit quiet lately? I mean, in all fairness, and it isn't quite the same thing. It is an apples to apples here because he did not have a dance partner with a promoter in the middle and everybody saying they wanted the same thing, but contracts just weren't done. It's not quite the same thing, but hasn't GSP gone just a little bit quiet as of late? We know he's in the gym. We've seen the pictures. His coach has come out and talked about this. We know all of these things. And when you do look at the wild card that appears to be Connor right now, okay? First off, Connor's going to get through Cowboy. That's a very hard thing to do. And the odd makers in Vegas agree with me. That's a lot closer fight, particularly at 170 pounds. But let's just take Connor and say he wins. Does he go down to 155 pounds to fight the winner of Khabib versus Tony? And I think that becomes a real question as well, because at Connor, if we're just looking for big fights, Connor versus Khabib, we know through the history of the sport, the fact that it did 2.4 million buys, which is the all-time industry record. And we know rematches to be bigger than the original. We don't know that it will be, but we know historically, oftentimes they are. But what if it isn't Khabib? Is Connor versus Tony the same magnificent blockbuster fight, or would Tony versus Gaethje satisfy when you're then offered a Connor versus Masvidal? By the way, what if it is Ferguson or Khabib, whoever wins there? But what if that's the reason that George has been so quiet? What if George already has something in place, which is why now the ship is starting to steer and the conversation is starting to be built around Connor versus Masvidal? What would the point possibly be of dangling that out there? I don't have the answers. I only have speculation for you. I'm just creating a little bit of a conspiracy theory because the conspiracies are fun to talk about. But I was the first to tell you guys when Dana was caught by a TMZ camera in Beverly Hills and said I would never do Connor versus Masvidal because Masvidal is just too big for him. I did tell you guys, this is a fight promoter that's three steps ahead. And that statement isn't going to sit well with the Irishman. And it didn't. It absolutely did not. And now here we are with Connor at 170 pounds, and I am just not convinced that he has any eyes of dropping down to 155 and reclaiming something. I do believe that Connor wants hardware. I do believe that he is a title collector, and I do believe he sees the significance in belts, but he's got his eye on a different belt. Connor's not wrong to recognize that Masvidal is a champion. The ones that are wrong are the fans who are seeming to resist that idea. They weren't the night that fight happened. They weren't when Nate walked out one side of the tunnel and George walked out the other and Madison Square Garden is on its feet. Nobody resisted it then, but when they didn't get the outcome of the match that they wanted, and it was a largely positive Diaz crowd, when they didn't get the outcome that they wanted, they then tried to rewrite the entire script as though it didn't even happen. Well, it did happen. It absolutely happened. George Masvidal is a champion. If Conor McGregor wants to come in and grab more hardware and put his finger in George's chest, I think that's interesting. I think that's very, very interesting. And I think that you have a lot of really good options, but there is something that is very loud about the recent silence of George St. Pierre. I don't know what to make of it. I talk to George a lot, by the way. I never ask him these things. I don't ask him these things because I prefer to come to you guys and talk about George than talk to George. I prefer that. I don't always want the answers. There's something of the mystery that is St. Pierre and what's going on in his little mind and what weight class and what opponent. There's something to the mystery of it that I'd rather not solve. I would rather not talk to George about it. Come and talk to all of you guys. Have George see me talking about him. And then when we never talk, it's like it never happened. He acts like he didn't see the video. I act to him like I don't make videos about him. I don't necessarily want the answer, but there is something about the way he just all of a sudden went a little bit quiet. Oh, by the way, at the same time that Connor came back, at the same time that now Masvidal is the biggest star in the sport, at the exact same time that Usman is looking for an opponent, and the true number one contender, who is Colby Covington, happens to have a broken jaw right now, and you've got a 155-pound title that's going to be contested in April between Tony and Khabib. There just seems like a lot of spots where the great St. Pierre could fill in, and he happened to shut his mouth right as all those pieces are coming together. For me, it's suspicious. Why not make a resolution that will actually mean something? Do yourself a favor and save some cash with our friends at Geico. With Geico, it will take you only 15 minutes to save 15% or more on car insurance. Geico has been offering great rates and great service for 75 years. And anytime you need help, you can speak to one of their trained specialists 24/7. Go to geico.com and start saving cash. Extra money in your pocket? It just might be the most rewarding thing you do today. My producer just asked me, what is the biggest fight to make for Conor? I go, well, hold on a second. Are you asking me what's the biggest fight in terms of what do people want to see the most? Are you asking me what's the best move for Conor to make? And he goes, both. Okay, let me try to answer that. But you have to understand, too, what a difference a day makes and what cards do we have to play here? I mean, how crazy do I, can I say Conor versus St. Pierre? Can I say Conor versus Tony, not Conor versus Khabib, when Conor and Khabib have to go figure that out to see who the last man standing is? It's one of these things that I don't know can be answered until Conor performs. Don't forget, Conor McGregor has fought at 170 pounds twice, and he fought there against the same guy. And he didn't look wonderful in either fight, in all fairness. And he got a ton of credit for coming back as a 45 and a 55 pounder and going all the way up to 70 and redoing everything again. Same opponent, same arena, same rounds. Everything's the same. I'm going to solve this problem. And he did. For me to be critical and say he didn't look great in those, to say that he wore down a little bit, which he should have because of the size, he should have. To say that he ate a lot of punches, and he dealt with them well, but he ate a lot of punches. He did not look fantastic. It was very hard, long, drawn-out battles. He got a lot of credit. I'm giving him credit, too, but two different conversations. I think he does need to come back and show us what he can do at 170. I think he's got a very tough opponent in front of him. Should he get by Cowboy Cerrone, he deserves a lot of credit. I do happen to agree with Dana that if you want to use that as a qualification bout to go to 155, or if you want to keep him there and throw him into something at 170, I do think you can serve both masters, because in fairness, you are taking 55-pounders and you're just weighing them in at 170. In fairness, that's what's happening here. So if you wanted, as a person in a decision-making position, to use this match to qualify for 55 or to test the waters at 70, I think you've got the door open, and I think you're well within your rights to do that. What is the biggest fight? What is the bigger fight? Yes, if Conor was to get over on Cowboy, grab the microphone, and go full Conor on George Masvidal and add as a stipulation, I will only give you the red panty night if you put the belt up for grabs. Now, that belt was supposed to be a one-night, one-off, one-time. But it doesn't have to be. I mean, that's not a law anywhere. That's not written down. In all fairness, I mean, right, come on. We could have a little bit of wiggle room with the belt. Sure we can. And if Conor puts his face and his finger in George's chest, Conor's going to have a fight with George. It's as simple as that. Simple as that. Anybody else as well. Anybody. But Conor says, hey, listen, let's be fair amongst men here. I bring a lot to the table, and I am going to bring you a red panty night. That's what I'll put up, and I'll even come to your weight class to do it, and I'll even do it for five rounds. Do everything the way you want to do it, but in exchange, I'm out here collecting trophies. You got one. You're putting it up. I can tell you right now, Masvidal is going to say, okay. And in my opinion, the way the landscape sits right now, the biggest fight that you could make, to answer my producer's question, would be Conor, off a win, versus Masvidal, who brings the belt. All right, guys, that'll do it for us for today. Enjoy your weekends, but I'll see you all right back here on Wednesday. Until then, I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.
Thanks for listening to Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Hey, Jordan here. I know a lot of you create your own podcasts, and a lot of you already have one like me. I obviously love what I do. It's taken a lot of hard work to get to this point of success. You shouldn't have to pay fees for platform hosting, distribution, analytics, or fees to create a podcast. You need to be able to focus on producing the best show possible. Now, Podcast One, that's the network I'm on, they have Launchpad Digital Media, or Launchpad DM for short. So it's free, includes unlimited hosting, full control of distribution. You have access to a full dashboard with analytics. Again, totally free. You own everything, by the way. You own your content, you own your subscribers, no tricky stuff there. And you get your own show page on launchpaddm.com for people to listen to and subscribe to your show. It's the only hosting platform brought to you by the leading network, Podcast One. Podcast One will promote the site, drive people to discover your podcast, and if your show grows, you could even be invited to join Podcast One's all-star roster, which includes people like Adam Carolla, Caitlin Bristow, Shaq, Lady Gang, and of course, me, Jordan Harbinger. I'm there too. You also get access to their production and sales support. So with all this completely free, don't use other hosting platforms. Why would you need to? Learn more or sign up now at launchpaddm.com. And don't forget to check out The Jordan Harbinger Show.